Hello, and welcome to another episode of MK Crypto Diaries. I am your host, Dr. Justine Sherrera, and today is the 7th of December, 2022. Today, we will be discussing all things related to VCs investing in cryptocurrency startups. We will be speaking about ethical responsibility of these VCs. Also, in the light of the recent FTX scandal, is there such a thing as ethical responsibility, especially since the backing of certain investors end up shaping public opinion, FTX case in point? Are VCs actually doing proper due diligence when investing in these cryptocurrency startups? Do VCs have the technical expertise needed to understand some of these technical and financial risks involved when investing in certain types of cryptocurrency startups? Are valuations being blown up out of proportion? Here with us to discuss today, we have Mike Wood. Mike Wood is the CFO of Sonar. Sonar is an intuitive and powerful data analytics and portfolio tracking system. It features a central platform of analytics tools, a Web3 wallet, and educational content. Sonar platform also has a native token called Ping, which serves as a utility token empowering its ecosystem. Mike Wood has also spent 15 years running a charity in Southeast Asia, focusing on community development and trading. Mike, very glad to have you with us here today. We're going to discuss a very, very exciting topic, which I believe is not talked about enough.
Thank you, Justine. Yes, I'm very happy to be here and specifically very happy to be talking about what we're about to talk about.
I agree. So let's get right into it. So obviously, investing in crypto is very, very risky. VCs hope to make 100x, but should be investing long. What are some of the risks that come to mind from a startup point of view? What happens if, for example, the funding just stops? Do startups understand these risks, and do they have certain strategies in place to perhaps mitigate some of these risks, especially since the startup VC relationship is very, very fluid most of the time? So what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, as a startup in and of itself, I think there's a few different classes because we've seen in this space, specifically in blockchain, a lot of startups are founded by people who maybe do not have a business or any sort of financial background. You have a lot of developers that are approaching the space, bring a product to market, great ideas, but maybe the business fundamentals are lacking behind this. So we have seen a lot of projects that on the face are great projects, but let's say they don't have enough runway, or they have not built a moat around their project, or they don't have any revenue streams set up yet, or even in the plan, because you do see a lot of projects that are run based on the value of the token behind the project in and of itself, which is quite dangerous, to be honest, because then you're literally just saying, if there's interest in the project, if you can, let's say, trade your way to having enough capital to be able to continue to develop until you have revenue streams, then you're hoping that you can time that appropriately. But normally you see a lot of people, if they're relying on token to supply their project, maybe they have too much of the token, so they can't really pull out their assets to build, again, that moat, so they can continue to develop and bring products online, which eventually brings them revenue streams. So if there's no funding, A, have they actually secured enough capital? Do they know how to project out, okay, 2-3 years? Can they say, if there is a bear market, which we're in right now, obviously, can they survive through that? Have they planned through that? I think there is a lot of hype and a lot of energy going into this space. Money was being poured in by VCs, and there maybe was not enough thinking, okay, what is going to happen? Exactly what you say, what happens when the money dries up? I don't think there was a lot of planning in that case. And that's where I come back to, I think a lot of projects are founded with people that necessarily aren't approaching it from the business case, but are approaching it from the idea phase and trying to build around the idea without that fundamental base.
Of course. I mean, if most of your balance sheet consists of the your own native token, eventually, you know, you might run into some risks. And that's exactly what happened with FTX. I believe most of the tokens on their balance sheet was FTT. So, and then if everyone dumped, they ended up with nothing. Which brings me into my next question, which is focused on FTX. So obviously FTX is on the mouth of every single person who operates or trades in crypto today. And the story is still unfolding on a day-to-day basis. So FTX, the startup that blew up, then went bust, was backed some of the biggest VCs in the market. So to name just a few, these include Sequoia Capital, BlackRock, SoftBank, and Binance. Do you think that there was a lack of proper due diligence conducted by some of these players? And at some point, everyone was just sort of riding the wave without doing proper checks? Could there have been a lack of ongoing investor or shareholder supervision? For example, were they checking these audited financials on a year-to-year basis? So could some of these VCs be partly to blame in this FTX story, which is unfolding? Because everyone speaks about FTX and what happened, but no one's really speaking about it from the perspective of VCs. So what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, I don't think necessarily that VCs are to blame, because again, investors come in, they give money. It's really their fiduciary responsibility to understand what they're investing in. You know, you can kind of see it almost as caveat emptor. That being said, after you've entered in and you're looking at equity positions, I do believe that they should have been digging a little bit deeper. The continuous rounds of funding that continued on without having an absolute clear picture of the state of liquidity, the state of collateral, what was liquid, what was illiquid. I mean, looking at an event, I mean, you're looking at FTX effectively like a bank, right? Anybody that's investing in this, you know that you're looking at what would it look like in the event of a bank run. I mean, you have to look at the best possibilities. You have to look at the worst possibilities. The fact is that nobody was saying, all right, in the event of a bank run, what are the procedures that will happen? Because nobody asked this, you can't say it's wholeheartedly any of the funders' blame, but it should have been asked. And it's just absolutely amazing that there is no internal documentation. I mean, we can see the entire collapse of the corporate structure inside of FTX, or we can't say collapse. There was just non-existent, really, there's non-existent structure. One thing that's telling is throughout this whole situation, we haven't heard anything from the CFO. I mean, the CFO has effectively gone under the current the entire time. It's really interesting to say, we haven't heard anything from that. What did they do? What was their role? What was their responsibility?
Yes.
You can't put the blame on VC when there's that kind of lack, but you can say, what the hell were you investing in if these simple basic situations are not understood? I mean, the biggest risk to a bank is a bank run. Why wouldn't you ask that question? So no, they're not at fault, but why wouldn't they have asked this? That's the crazy part. And even then, you know, why would you want to not understand what the revenue streams are? Why would you not want to understand what the revenue streams are comprised of? So if you're getting an FTT token, what does that look like? If you're going to have to liquidate that, or you want to pull your position against the company that you're invested in, or what is that going to do for the market share of FTT? I mean, it's a complete failure. I think everybody was absolutely high on what was going on. It was getting traction. It was onboarding investors. It was doing this. It was, for the time being, easy money. And as we've seen, money's not necessarily smart. There's dumb money and there's smart money. This was absolute hype involved in some of the dumbest financial decisions that we've seen happen in the past 5-10 years.
I agree. Those are some very, very valid points. And you touched upon sort of complex structure. So now it's unfolding and, you know, coming to light in terms of how many companies and how many persons were actually involved in the structure. And that's why I think it's so hard as a new VC or investor to come on board and understand and do due diligence of each and every single player or component of the structure and shred it to pieces in terms of to give a very good look of everything which needs to be looked at. So it was very thwarted in terms of what was going on. And to add to your point in terms of due diligence, I do also agree that to a certain extent, we cannot really blame VCs and investors. And I think what we should be really looking at is management. So you mentioned the CFO wasn't even, sort of mentioned or didn't even provide any remarks. So competence and expertise in terms of management is obviously very, very important. In this particular case, FTX backers in this case didn't demand board seats as a condition of their investments, as they typically do. Over here, so the three persons which consisted of the board of FTX were SBF, Jonathan Cheeseman, a former FTX executive, and Arthur Thomas, a lawyer in Antigua who specializes in online gaming. There was also someone who was very, very close to FTX, which was Ravi Mathur. And this person oversaw the firm's FTX investments, and this person specialized in software. So all in all, when you had to break it down in terms of who was running what and overseeing what from a management perspective, it really doesn't sound like enough. Does this sound like enough to run such a large and complex operation and such a risky operation? And when I say VC is partly to blame, were they doing their proper due diligence in terms of who would be running the operation? So that's obviously very important, point in terms of VCs when investing and how investing.
If you were to look at companies with similar revenue streams or banks with similar revenue streams, you would see thousands of employees and the financial control systems that they would have in place are phenomenal. The size of these teams are massive, and some are just, focused on risk, internal risk. It's beyond me that these kinds of expectations, I can't say demands, at least expectations wouldn't have been there. Because even if we look at the spiderweb network of all of the different incorporations and different subsidiaries that was involved with FTX and FTX US and Australia and all of these things, Japan, you have, I think, more than 50 right now, 50 different companies operating under the umbrella. So trying to basically force this through four or five people and not having an immense team behind them, which we've seen didn't exist, it is shocking. Is it something that was said was in place, or people just thought, okay, someone's a genius and they can handle it? Let alone I can handle 50 companies at the same time as trading a multi-billion-dollar portfolio, as well as manage a multi-billion-dollar venture capital fund. Unbelievable to try and understand some of the larger investors, how they could wrap their mind that this was feasible, this was manageable by those in place. So there's not really an answer to that, obviously we weren't in the rooms listening to this conversation, but on the surface, even just the prima facie, it makes no sense.
No, I completely agree. And, it's actually quite funny. I was reading a report from Bloomberg, and apparently just a few days before this bank run on FTX, a broker approached some of the investors, some of the shareholders, and they asked if they're willing to sell some of their shares or their positions. And they all very, very, very quickly said no. So this also shows how ill-equipped and blindsided investors were to assess the company's toxicity and also the level of risks involved. Mm-hmm. So obviously all investors are very drawn to funding tech and the idea of funding the next PayPal. But in reality, they do lack some of the expertise and visibility to evaluate some of the legal and financial risks involved in these fintech businesses. And if I had to just roll on to the next question, so do you think that in certain circumstances, the use of a venture capitalist is to some extent dangerous when investing in crypto startups or trading platforms. This given the fact that some of these platforms end up being used by societies at large, and many of these investors end up being retail investors. So furthermore, do you think that the backing of certain investors, such as in this case FTX, do shape public opinion about certain companies? Do you think investors should take these points into consideration, or is it a case of their money, their terms? So this is a sort of a question about morality and ethics. So at its crux.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple ways to look at it as well, because there are different categories of venture capital funds as well. There's some that existed prior to the market, and then there was an entire new category of new venture capital popping up as we had the last bull run. There were billions of dollars that were generated in all these different spaces, mostly, you know, in tokens. It wasn't generated outside the crypto market, but inside the crypto market, billions of dollars were going into venture funds and then being able to be split out into projects. And, you know, considering how small the crypto market actually is, the level of, let's say, viable projects, there weren't so many. So people were actively searching for investment opportunities. They weren't taking their crypto assets off chain and investing into the Forex market or doing, you know, a physical VC in the physical world. It was still contained inside the crypto sphere. So there was a lot of money that needed to find a place, it needed to invest. So it was throwing money at a lot of projects, and some for some reasons or another, some went viral. I mean, we've seen meme coins go viral where there really is no use for this, but here we are. They go viral. There's capital that's built there. People that bought something at pennies on the dollar, and it goes up to a dollar, or it goes up to $20 or $30 or $100. All of a sudden that value can get transferred into projects of varying quality. And when you do look at it, yes, you see larger VC coming in and selecting projects, which I think there is some sort of ethical responsibility, at least when it comes to me personally. I can't speak on behalf of others, but I do believe that we should have an ethical responsibility if you have that kind of capital in a new market to really take and look at what is the market and what are these tools. Because effectively, when VC backs a project, they are selecting the tools for the users. And we're still in a market that is still growing, and we're adopting more users, and we're not even close to a mass adoption event. You are selecting and you're creating that path for what future users will be using. So right now, I think VC does carry a burden to respond to, is this a real tool that is ethical? I mean, is it something? Are the users being used as a means to an end for just capital generation? Or are these tools that we are using capital as a tool to create other tools for the end, which is the users? Right now, we should be looking at, especially if we were a VC, I would be looking at building tools that creates the future adoption of events, not just trying to capitalize on the current market, but to build for a future market that functions well. And I think that was kind of the issue now, is because we were looking at the tools are just being built. All right, it's cool, and we can get some users, we can generate revenue, but it was very short term and very siloed, not looking at building the actual digital economy out, but it was capturing that local hype. Money was coming in, finding projects, pumping it up, selling tokens, pulling out, investing in another project, again, dumping a project there. Effectively, it was like mini Ponzi-nomics. It was mini Ponzi schemes going on, rather than just solidifying, doing really deep, proper due diligence and finding real management teams, real projects that are building for the eventual future where we do have mass adoption. So it's a yes and no. I think they should have an ethical responsibility to work together with the space to identify the proper projects that are really truly needed for the future when, you know, a billion or 2 billion people are using this space, and not just trying to shift whatever is existing now into somebody's pockets. Because right now the market doesn't even begin to, it pales in comparison into a Forex market, or it pales in comparison into a commodities market. The amount of capital in this market has not even begun to touch on what it could be. So stop trying to cannibalize the market now and build for the future market. and know exactly what that means, right?
That's a really, really interesting perspective, actually, that VCs are indirectly selecting and the tools that end users are going to use. That's a really interesting perspective. And I think that the culture is slowly shifting or changing, especially with each event or each bear market. Things correct themselves, and projects and teams and VCs and all market players involved do change the way they do things or the way they approach things. So you touched upon a few valid points, specifically ethical responsibility. So do VCs do have, to some extent, ethical responsibilities? What are some of the other obligations that investors may have or should have when investing capital? Or perhaps you could break down some of the process in terms of due diligence or checks, in addition to obligations.
I mean, regardless of the due diligence and making sure that there's a proper foundation behind it, as well as the legality of something, because sometimes there's some quasi-legal operations out there because it's not regulated, but really trying to look forward in the future and say, okay, are these activities at risk? If they're at risk, what does it look like to put in money now and to get people involved in a project, outside investors not involved in funding rounds? Is there going to be a future legal event that could potentially impact not only you as an investor, but the other people that by providing funding will be attracted to the project? That's something else. But also looking at the funding mechanism. So the funding mechanisms right now, you see a lot of venture capital money coming in, wanting to enter in against a token of a project, which I think is it was trendy back in the last bull run. I think it will continue to still be pushed, but I think it's very short-sighted and very risky, because when you go heavy at funding in against a token, you are seeing projects that are heavily owned by individual entities or individual investors, where you're trying again to build an ecosystem of millions of users, but the dominant share of of the investment of the token is held by one person. So as it grows, you still have the position, you have this quasi-ethical dilemma of, as an investor, if I want to realize return, am I going to dump onto the market, or am I going to say, you have this very almost illiquid asset, right? I mean, you could see with FTT, some of it was actually illiquid. They could not afford to dump it because they would ruin their own investments. They would ruin their own company, as it did. But that being said, you see a lot of it still based off of that. Give me 30, 40, 50% of a token, and we'll invest this. You're looking at the eventual collapse of a future program. And you're effectively looking at, again, Ponzi schemes, because you're saying, all right, the value is really based around that token. Now we need more users to use this token. And once that happens, once they put their money in it, we can extract it from them. And so I'm interested to see this develop more into pure equity of a company and not behind the token in and of itself, because the tokens are in general utility tokens, not investment tokens. So why would you necessarily want to own a majority share of the utility if that's what the users are going to need? If you want to onboard 1 billion users, you're going to need to have an asset that does that and something that you're not going to dump 50% of. Why not look at equity? Why not tie that to revenue streams driven by the company? Because if the company is a solid company and it has a sound business model, it should have revenue streams that doesn't involve selling its own token, at least not primarily. So if that's the case, shift it towards more equity stakes rather than just tokens. Similarly, I would be very interested to see more convertible debt options show up. But again, this is also going to come with a more mature space where there's more mature businesses that are offering mature business cases or mature business models based off of real revenue streams that can be generated regardless of the utility token required to operate a project. So the convertible debt, I think, comes with that kind of business structure, which I do really hope that this space starts to produce. We do need businesses that are generating revenue, that are not reliant solely upon a token, a utility token's value to keep it propped up. It's almost as if the utility token should be ancillary. Yes, there is a revenue stream there. Yes, there is the ability for that value to go immensely up Sure, but you should be looking at the transactional interest, right? If
Of
you're
course.
offering utility for a platform or for a tool, then you're paying for the tool, not hoping that the value of the token goes up. You should be able to generate enough revenue off of your tool, off of your platform, off of your service, and not have to rely solely on the value of a utility token. That's my opinion, to be honest.
No, and that's great because obviously, you know, a lot of words are being thrown around and tokens sort of get hyped up. But what people really need to look at is, okay, this is a utility token. What use? What is the utility in relation to a real business or a real operating platform? And not what utility can it have in itself in terms of generating a return on investment within that token. So once again, it also sort of brings us back to expertise and competence when analyzing these projects and not just focusing on, oh, that's a nice branding, that's a nice design, they have a massive community, hype, marketing, but going back to basics and the real fundamentals of business at the end of the day. I'd like to move and shift to remaining on topic in relation to VCs, but from a bit of a broader context, which I think is actually quite interesting and quite controversial. So VCs, the VCs were backing FTX. Now, FTX, to a certain extent, was backing Congress and consequently trying to shape cryptocurrency policy in the US. So essentially, VCs were indirectly funding the Democratic Party and also to a certain extent the Republic Party through FTX. SBF was even invited to speak at Congress. So on a more macro and even deeper level, the chain is actually much more thwarted due to this interconnection between crypto and US politics. So the chain of events here shows us the links between Wall Street and government. And the effects that these links can have on societies at large. So, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, to be honest, a company can make these donations, right? I mean, you've seen other companies do it all the time. Banks do it all the time. I don't think it was probably outlined in the terms from a VC's point of view that says, okay, if I'm going to invest 400 million, we acknowledge that 23 million is going to be invested in a certain political party or political affiliation. I don't think that was part of the term
I
sheet.
doubt it too.
So, I mean, you can't say that. I mean, you never know. Maybe in some background conversation, somebody said this, anything's possible. But I highly doubt on the whole, if we just look at VCs on the whole, I don't think that they would take the route to say, all right, we're going to give you money to indirectly influence politics. Because if they just wanted to do it, they would just do it. And they could. And then they could say, well, all right, we donated this, but we want this man to be our spokesman. So they could just go that route. I think it would be much easier for them to do that. The difference is, you kind of try to think why was SBF having this conversation at the same time guilty of doing everything that he was speaking out against. You never know. I mean, maybe this was him positioning in the future, saying, okay, I'm trying to cover my bases right now so I can plead ignorance later. That may be the possibility. But when that starts happening as a VC, I would hope that they would have conversations with that and say, okay, so our contributions were not political. We're investing in this business. What are your aims and objectives for this? That being said, him going into Congress and talking about these issues, that should have been a red flag for them to say, okay, are we actually doing this? Because he's talking about, all right, are all the positions collateralized? Did they know? I mean, obviously they didn't know because they weren't collateralized. But to say that VC funding is intermingled, I mean, that's just fund flows. Anywhere that money goes, the capacity for it to impact politics is there. I mean, Elon Musk is another great example. He can impact policy because he has a massive amount of wealth. I mean, Amazon can impact, Google can impact policy because of not only their tools, but massive wealth. Certain families can impact because of massive wealth.
No, I agree. It's just situation, and as you said, the flow of funds sort of it's quite common that you have, you know, VCs invest in various companies and then those companies end up being political donors. It's just quite astonishing that in this case, SBF got so close and involved with US politics, all while there was such a large scale of misappropriation of clients' funds taking place behind the scenes. And in fact,
the
irony of it
that's
all
a,
is
that's a
sort of
touchy
there.
subject, right? Because we don't have any facts, but usually where there's smoke, there's some sort of fire. There's a really interesting network of connections that are involved around all of this.
Of course.
And we could go into speculation. Sometimes it could border on conspiracy. That doesn't mean that anything's wrong. There could have been something extremely nefarious behind it. Hopefully, as always, follow the money. And with crypto, that's a little bit harder sometimes, but follow the money and hopefully we can find out some answers. And hopefully there really will be a deep investigation into how this works, because, you know, at this point, we do see that there is some sort of regulatory framework that is absolutely needed, because this will just continue to happen. Celsius, we have Celsius, we have Voyager, we have BlockFi, we have, of course, FTX, we have all of these collapsing products that were holding billions of dollars of users' funds. We can't have pure, I can't call it anarchy. See, people say a crypto market is anarchy. It's not. It's more nihilistic. There's people that just don't care. Anarchy can still have autonomous collectives. You can still have some sort of guidelines on how to operate with other people so as not to directly hurt them. There can still be some guidelines and some rules. But the way it acts now is quite nihilistic. It's just whatever, burn the house down, it's fine. Nobody's held accountable. So I do hope that there is some sort of system that can hold people accountable for their actions in this space.
No, I agree. You know, we're seeing crazy aftermath stories, like politicians now giving some of the donations received to charity. And actually, many of the FTX crypto fund candidates have done quite fairly well in U.S. elections. So sort of John Fetterman, for example, and some others. So, you know, it's sort of a semi quasi embarrassing situation or position to be in for many players involved. But obviously, in hindsight, if they knew, they wouldn't have acted in those ways, I assume and I hope. It's just sort of quite crazy that, you know, this all stemmed from just a very well-funded startup. It's just one of those things.
I mean, but again, you have a house of cards, right?
Yes, exactly.
You have poor understanding of UST or of, you know, of algorithmic stablecoins, Luna collapse, and you have heavy buying of financial VCs in Luna that collapses. Then what happens to the rest of their books? You have Celsius collapsing. So all of these different assets, and again, you know, being picked up by FTX at that time. So acquiring that obligation and trying to work that out, you have this entire house of cards that eventually something has to collapse. I mean, technically, it probably all could have worked out if something didn't happen. If one thing didn't happen, then the system would have kept going. But that's the whole point. You have to identify the weak points.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
No, exactly. No, that's great. Very, you know, very insightful. It's just quite interesting to speak about all the irony and controversy which happened at the very, very high levels. And now I'd just like to move away from this topic and perhaps speak about valuations a bit. We've touched up on the topic throughout the episode. So obviously we're seeing massive exaggerated valuations, and these could to a certain extent play a part of the problem that lead up to certain events. So receiving very large amounts of cash very rapidly can inflate a company. Also, an explosion of wealth so early on can lead to certain behavior. Now, as many know, valuations are very sentiment-driven. Right now, valuations are not really skyrocketing, and funding is well, I wouldn't say has dried up, but is not so easy to come by. First, we had the bear market, and now, which each collapse or negative episode, this impacts the markets and obviously investors at large. So the question to you here is, who comes up with these valuations, and really, how reliable are they?
I mean, it depends on the project, right? So some valuations are based off of the value of the underlying token, which then, when you look into, I mean, it's actually pure speculation, but you look at, historical data and you say, okay, trending, this is what it's going to look like. You know, it's going to 100x over the next 10 years. Obviously, if we just carry this trend line without looking at the fundamentals of the business underlying it, that happens. That's not how we do it. I mean, we look at revenue streams and this is how it's going to build. We're not basing it off of the token in and of itself. But you do see a lot of people saying, well, obviously, the price where it is now, you know, we can go to 20 million holders, we can go to 10 million holders. Obviously, we can do that because the crypto market's going to grow, and even the market share we have now will just naturally grow that large, and we'll do some marketing. What marketing? Well, we don't really know what works with crypto, but it's going to work. So there is a lot of fundamental speculation because this market is still so new and there is not much data. So, okay, customer acquisition in crypto. How do you do that when you really, you know, the general ages, okay, you know, the regions, that's fine, but they could be going through VPNs and proxies. These could be thousands of wallets generated by one company that's just operating thousands of wallets to generate, let's say, false transactions or market making their own token. I mean, this exists. You can't really say that every single user right now is one person. It's not a one-to-one wallet to person ratio. So you do have this general understanding of looking at valuation with a one-to-one ratio. It's one wallet per person. So you say, okay, there's 300 million people interacting with blockchain. Well, no, that's not the case. I mean, there's some, like, we know that there's some that are operating with 1,000 or 2,000 wallets in one organization just doing that. But that's not necessarily taken into account. It's similar to when Elon was talking about Twitter users, how many millions of Twitter users were just bots. That affects valuation, but that's not necessarily entering the conversations, because that conversation, I will be honest, it would effectively bring VC funding to a halt, because you wouldn't be able to accurately assess the value if they're looking at just, let's say, token valuation as a prime part of the valuation process. If you look at revenue streams, you look at internet users, and you look at some crypto adoption, you can have a very safe estimate on what you expect your market to grow to. You can look at your total available market, your local markets. You can do that. But when it is so heavily shifted towards token valuation as the prime component of a valuation, there's just incredible amounts of speculation. Like I said, you don't really know what works for marketing in this industry. We don't really know where all the target markets are. We don't really know what brings people into the market. We don't really know what keeps them in the market. We don't really have the metrics on what drives the best use or retains customers the best. That is still a field in its absolute infancy. So, yeah, I mean, people shoot for the moon. I mean, everybody says to the moon, but people really do say, okay, well, it's going to obviously be a $5 billion investment in 5 years. So sure, let's say it's valued this in 10 years and we'll give you that value right now, when the what's required for it to be at that level, there's not even a fraction of what's necessary to get there right now. So I would say absolutely, there are many projects that are overvalued given where they are today. So you have a lot of VC looking at future value and rewarding it now based off of, again, lots of speculation.
I know that's super interesting. And it's definitely hard to come up with those accurate figures. It's a mix of what data you have available right now and what you could hope to project to achieve, which obviously doesn't really reflect the true picture. But some people do take those numbers as Bible or have very, very hopeful expectations for certain outcomes.
Sure. I mean, just to add to that, I do want to give the caveat that, in other industries, you can make those future predictions far easier. There is lots of historical data, right? Or there are proven routes and proven tracks, and we do have experts in different industries. It's just specifically because this industry is so new that we lack that deep level of expertise to be able to project the kinds of projections that we're seeing in valuation.
And also the stage of your business. If you already have, you know, an operating business which is already generating revenue, then it's sort of easy to predict if you're going to double it or triple it or stay the same, depending on the upward flow that you're moving on. But if it's a very new company or it's a startup, it's very, very hard to come up with those figures and also keep to those figures. So that's obviously a part of, I wouldn't say the problem, but one of the issues or things that, that VCs and startups have to deal with, unfortunately, when looking for funding. So I'd just like to close the question with sort of a personal journey question. So Sonar is looking for funding to scale up their business. Now, what are some of the issues and challenges that you encounter with VCs? And sort of what has your personal journey been throughout these last months or years in terms of looking and receiving capital?
I would say the hardest thing, the biggest issue is to kind of bring some of the investors back to really back to the fundamentals. It doesn't seem as sexy to say, all right, we're investing on business fundamentals to grow this business category. This is our market segment. This is where we want to go with it. Rather than, okay, we would like a very large share of tokens. So there still is that mindset of we want token share. And to be able to sit there and really that's their prime focus. That's when they engage. Their first ask is this. And you say, look, this doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense for you. This doesn't make sense for the customers because the business is driven around a service. So we need the customers to be able to have access to a utility that can use this. The moment that you are going to dominate that space, we're limiting the ability for our customers to interact with our revenue streams. So really trying to ground them back down into the fundamentals and say, hey, look, the business is sexy. The business is in this industry. It uses this utility. Yes, there is an opportunity for you to participate in the utility as well, but we need to get back to a real revenue generating business that is it's able to operate and succeed and is fundamentally built on a revenue stream that is not related upon the absolute performance of the token. Because the way it is that, oh, well, we'd like to see this return on this token. Yeah, we all would, but that doesn't affect the 10-year projections, at least not majorly. We could see some drawdown, let's say, you know, 10%, 20% drawdown if there is a collapse in the price of a token, but it's not going to completely plummet and bankrupt the company. Mm-hmm. That needs to be there. So let's not put the importance there. Let's look at the investment and building an enterprise around the tools, not the utility, not the utility token, but around the utility. So that's been a tough one because again, we just came out of 2021, which was huge. And when Bitcoin was at 70,000, that was a crazy time. It was so easy to just be able to flip money there. Now people are still looking for that coin opportunity, but you really don't have that kind of tokenomics existing in this market. So again, them trying to deal with the cognitive dissonance of that opportunity not being there and needing to shift to fundamentals, that's been the biggest growing pain, to be honest. But I think it's one that I know myself, but I know the team is really proud to be a part of because we've been talking about this since you know, the rise of 2021, we were in the middle of the bull market saying, there's an issue with this. We need to go back to fundamentals because, you know, we were seeing people getting scammed out of their money left and right. We need to return to fundamentals. And while VC money wasn't flowing to us because they could find an easier route than just go through us because we wanted to have a real conversation and build a real business, they could easily go there, flip it, let a token go up and effectively, you know, Ponzinomics, but do a little Ponzi scheme, boom, pull money, make profit there. It was easier for them to do it then, but it's safer to do it this way. So getting safety and security back into the conversation, that's a very delicate negotiation. But again, one that we're super proud to be a part of and we're steadfast to continuing to push that route and hopefully encourage others to continue to join that journey as well.
No, that's fantastic. And I agree, these are definitely very tough times for startups looking to scale or receive funding. And I do believe that only the strong projects and teams will not only survive but actually succeed once we do come out of this bear market. And me personally, I've been watching Sonar grow for the last couple of years, and I have no doubt that you will be one of the top teams and projects to evolve and come out of these times. So thank
Thank
you
you,
so
Christine.
much, Mike. It has been such a pleasure. Before I let you go, I'd just like to invite you to participate in a round of what I call bullshit. So basically, I will read out a sentence or a story, and you will just call out bullshit if you think it's false.
Okay.
So true or false. So according to Bloomberg, Sequoia Capital VC said in a statement that it conducted rigorous due diligence processes. But when the firm invested in two of SBF's companies, so FTX.com and FTX.us, it did not have access to Alameda's balance sheet. Do you think that this is true or false?
I think false because I think the balance sheet was augmented.
Okay, so apparently, according to Bloomberg, this is actually true, which is quite crazy and would explain a lot. Yes, I know.
Okay.
So that's just self-explanatory. I will leave it at that. So thank you so much, Mike. It has been a real joy to have such an insightful conversation and discussion surrounding VCs, and funding and ethics. So for you, the listener, if you'd like to contact or get in touch with Mike Wood, CFO of Sonar, you can find him on LinkedIn. His portal is open, so feel free to drop him a line or a message. And if you have enjoyed the podcast episode, please go ahead and leave a review or like our podcast. And until then, stay tuned. Thank you for listening.